to play that song because we got two shakes in the studio here. Two shakes. Any more than it's... Never mind. So we're doing a special segment on our show today. We got a folk singer, an ex-jihadist, an imam, a rabbi, and an ex-pastor walk into a radio show. That was the hook that we kind of threw down. What do you think about that? Hey, we did all right with that one?
I like it. And everyone got along because that's what happens when you're not a...
Yeah. It's kind of like, I don't know, a peace train?
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come. And I believe it could be something good has begun.
Well, of course, what's his name again? Yusuf Islam?
Yusuf Islam.
Cat Stevens singing there. I would have loved to have had him on the show. So good. I asked and got turned down. I got rejected.
Yeah, you've been rejected by a lot of great people.
Been directed?
Rejected by a lot of great people.
I have. You're talking about my dating life? Or
all of the above.
Anyway, today's theme... It's based on a song by singer-songwriter David Wilcox called Three Brothers. It's the story of three brothers who each feel that they are the brother that deserves to inherit all of their father's estate. And as the will is read, they discover that each of their wishes came true. Each brother did inherit all of their father's estate. Now, although that math doesn't make sense, the song is basically an illustration of the world's three largest monotheistic religions, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, that happen to all come from the same piece of land that has been fought over for centuries, Jerusalem. But the most powerful narrative in the song is the impact all of this fighting between the brothers has had on their sister, whose name is Faith. So we started this segment off with David Wilcox, and he actually performed that live for us.
That's awesome.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. And then we just got off the phone with Rabbi Steve Leader, one of the most 10 influential rabbis in America. Our good friend Mubin Sheikh is here in the studio. He's an ex-Muslim extremist turned undercover intelligence operative. He's the author of Undercover Jihadi. Everyone knows Mubin. He's been on our show numerous times. He's become a good friend of the Drew Marshall Show. And he's another reason that we've kind of gone down this route. I wanted to have Mubin on our show one more time before the last show, June 29th, after 16 years. But before we kind of close off this segment of our show and move into the last hour, I remember we did a thing called Soul Survivor. It was based on the TV show Survivor. And we had religious tribes. And we kind of, you know, tongue-in-cheek, competing for the soul of one person, right? But basically, we got someone into the studio. We found someone who was a seeker, interested in exploring different faiths. And we had different leaders from different faiths. So we had Sheikh Hamza Yusuf was representing Tribe Muslim. How's that? Or Tribe Islam. By the way, should I call it Tribe Muslim or Tribe Islam? Grammatically, what's the right way?
I think it's Islamunati.
Oh, jeez. He's going to complicate it even further.
Anyway. Muslim follows Islam.
We had Sheikh Hamza Yusuf on, and the reason we had him on was because of Mubin. And Mubin said, you got to get this guy. Good luck, because he's going to be hard. And we caught him.
You're lucky.
And he blew me away. And I said, before I finish the show, I want this guy back. And he joins us now. From an undisclosed location. Where are you right now, Sheikh Yusuf?
I'm in California. It's a beautiful day. It's a blue sky.
Oh, I hate
and we
you.
Have a balmy breeze.
You can't say that.
All you Canadians. It's the way things work out. Geographical fate.
Yeah. Well, that's all the time we have for Sheikh Yusuf on the show. Thank you very much. So I want to introduce you to Mubin Sheikh. And before I let Mubin talk to you for the first time, I want to let you know that this guy I actually like. I don't like a lot
of
people.
You know what his name means in Arabic?
Irritating little guy?
No, lucid old man.
Lucid old man. Well, you're not going to get called that, Drew. I know that much.
Wow. What does my name mean?
Drew?
Yeah.
It's a past tense of draw.
Oh, great. Thanks. Boy, he really is the West's most influential Islamic scholar.
That was deep, man.
Well, listen, I want to let you know that, you know what? I'm going to shut up and you tell him. Sheikh, oh. Sheikh Yusuf, this is Mubin Sheikh. Mubin, you tell the world and tell Sheikh Yusuf the impact this guy's had on your world.
Oh, wow. Okay, first of all, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. We have a mutual friend in CD, Nazim Baksh, in Toronto.
Okay, yeah, Nazim's a good friend.
Yeah. Basically, my story starts, born and raised in Toronto, Canada, Indian background, Indian Muslim, so grew up in the hardcore madrasa system, got to high school, kind of, you know, became partier, had a house party, I got caught, shame and guilt. I ended up spending 4 months with the Tabligh Jamaat to India and Pakistan. In Pakistan, I actually met the Taliban, became enamored by them, left the Tablighis, really became, you know, Salafi Takfiri. I think we in the West, we call this Wahhabi, quote unquote.
Okay.
Became Salafi Takfiri. And then 9/11 happened, made me reconsider everything. And then I actually went to Syria and studied for 2 years in Jami al-Fatah, which is Islamic University there, and was introduced to Sufism. And I actually saw you, Sheikh Hamza, on TV. He has a program, or had a program, where he would go to different parts of the ancient, or I guess even Muslim Spain, and different places called Rihla, your Rihla series, like travel. And I remember asking the Arab guys that I was with, okay, tell me where this guy is from. Because white guy, American,
yeah,
and speaking like proper Arabic, and the Arabs were like, oh, he's like Tunisi, he's from Tunis, or he's Maghribi, he's from Morocco. And I was like, nope, it's from America, this guy. And so, yeah, I've been hearing your stuff for the longest time, and I mean, he's going to be too humble to admit it, but he really informed a whole generation of young Muslims growing up in the West, trying to traverse that journey in how much of, you know, your religious identity, how do you express it, how do you manifest it, and, you know, where do you go too far in manifesting it, you know, how much of it can you do before you're quote-unquote selling out, right? So these sorts of things, he really influenced a lot of people, you know, in that sense. It's unfortunate now that, you know, people, you're going to have trash talkers, of course, on all sides. Mm-hmm. I mean, that always happens, and of course, Sheikh Hamza's, you know, certainly been the recipient of a lot of that. But I got to tell you, man, like he really is more than just, you know, he should be more than on just the list of most influential Muslims. He's really changed a lot of people's lives. And Allah knows, you know, the good and the effect of good that you've had on people. So
would you say that he, sorry, we're going to let you talk in a minute there. By the way, you're calling him Sheikh Hamza.
Make sure, Mubin, you know, give me the correct address so I can send you the check.
Love it. Love it. Is it fair to say, but, and first of all, let's just get this right. Is it Sheikh Hamza or Sheikh Yusuf? Like, I don't know.
You know, I never listened to myself, but I listened to our previous conversations just so I wouldn't repeat myself for my own sake.
Yeah.
And I was so distraught at my California drawl. but you can just call me Hamza. That's what I told you in the first interview.
Okay, all right, cool. So listen, would you say that Hamza, Mubin, I'm talking to you.
Yeah, listen.
Would you say that Hamza had a bit of an impact in you not going full-blown, see what I did there?
Yeah, I saw it.
Full-blown terrorist guy?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because, and again, this is, remember, late 90s. So Sheikh Hamza remembers where he was. You know, he was also growing himself, right? And what really struck me about his approach was that the reliance on the traditional system of Islam, where for us, your, like, the sources of your knowledge, interpretive methodologies, all come from the Prophet, alayhi salam. You know, relying on that traditional chain of authority and chain of narration that actually goes back to the Prophet alayhi salam, as opposed to this do-it-yourself Islam that we're seeing a lot of people engaging in.
Right.
And that's why these do-it-yourselfers, they'll pick up a piece of the Quran or a piece of a prophetic text, and they'll, you know, draw a whole policy based on it. So.
Okay, enough of the rah-rah for this guy. Hamza.
Thank you.
Yeah. What is Sendala.org?
Sendala.org is a company that Dr. Aisha Subhani in Florida runs, which produces materials, my lectures, and a few other things. And we also publish books. Recently, we just published a book by Scott Kreider, who's at the University of Dallas. He's a rhetorician, and he wrote a book. I think it's a beautiful book called The Art of Persuasion, Aristotle's Rhetoric for Everybody. So it's my plug. So that's a book. Eva Brand from St. John's in Annapolis wrote the foreword to that, and I wrote the introduction. We published that. Trying to restore, you know, I'm a firm believer in civil discourse. They say that violence is when civilization collapses, and so rhetoric, violence is rhetoric by other means, because violence can be very persuasive. And so if we lose the ability to dialectically engage with each other in civil discourse, I mean, this is the foundation of our civilization in the West. We actually believe in a system where people come together, whether it's Parliament or Congress, and actually they debate and they discuss. And we're losing this. We can see civil society breaking down. This idea of shutting down free speech is a very dangerous phenomenon that's emerging on a lot of the campuses. The idea, Marcuse's idea of repressive tolerance, that we stop speech that we deem hate speech. And the problem with stopping speech that we deem hate speech is who determines what is dangerous speech. I mean, that's a very dangerous road to go down.
Man. So you're in California?
I am.
All right. So we just got off
this is ground zero. This is ground zero for the dissolution of Western civilization.
I know.
We're moving into a feudal society. Los Angeles City, and I'm talking about the city, has 58,000 homeless people. San Francisco is filled with homeless people. And at the same time, we have billionaires literally driving out the millionaires in the city. So if people can't afford rent, we have real problems in California, and we're in essence the canary in the coal mine, California, because trust me, face tattoos are coming. One of the things about people here, you're starting to see literally face tattoos, and the problem, and I feel sorry for the rebels, because it used to be a rebel just got a tattoo on his arm, but now everybody has tattoos on his arm, so the rebel gets it on the neck, then everybody gets it on the neck, he has to get it on the face. So it gets, the bar gets higher and higher for being outrageous. And it's quite troubling to see this happening around us.
The reason I asked about the California thing is because we just got off the phone with Rabbi Steve Leder. He is one of the 10 most influential rabbis in America, so says Newsweek magazine. And he's the big dude at Wilshire Boulevard Temple in L.A. And I was thinking, since I'm pals with Steve and I'm pals with Rick Warren and Hamza, you know, you and I are pretty tight now, right? I mean, I think...
Well, if you have my PayPal account.
We're really tight.
It would just be amazing to have the three of you have some kind of discourse somewhere. I would show up to that. Heck, I'd mediate that, baby. That'd be amazing. And then we could have Mubin Sheikh do security. So that would be good.
You know, I'll tell you a true story about Mubin Sheikh. Oh. I got a letter from one of the Toronto 18.
Oh boy!
And it's a very sad letter. It's several pages, and he was exposed to my teachings inside prison, and he was writing about how ashamed he felt. It really moved me considerably, just how he dishonored his faith, and that what he was taught was so antithetical to what Islam is, and now he had to sit in a prison cell feeling that incredible sense of shame. It was a very powerful letter.
So just to put some context in there, first of all, the person who wrote the letter and felt all that stuff is the guy who was part of the Toronto 18, who's now still in prison, I think, probably. Yes? No?
Well, there's only two left, so I'm assuming this guy got out.
Okay. And then the other thing is, again, just for context, those who are listening, we're in the studio here with Mubin Sheikh, who was brought in by CSIS to infiltrate the Toronto 18, this terrorist cell. And basically, I know this sounds all grandiose here, but the reality is you saved people's lives because you infiltrated these guys and ratted them out. Did I say that right?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't call it ratting them out. But no, but look, people, that's how people perceived it, and it's fine.
It's more outing the rat.
Oh!
Yeah, that's right. Oh, I'm outing the rats. That's
good.
I like that.
That's good.
I'm pretty sure you're not going to say the name of the one who wrote you the letter. I have a suspicion as to who it might be because a few of them did actually feel some remorse for what they did. But you know what? What's interesting is these were people who rejected Sheikh Hamza's stuff when they were on the outside.
Really?
Right? And because Sheikh Hamza was a part of that normative tradition, which they were not a part of.
You can call him Hamza, he said.
Okay. but he...
He can't. You can, Drew.
That's exactly. Right. He's part of your tribe. He's got to obey the code.
Yeah. You got to know your ranks. You know?
Okay. I almost called you Sheikh Hamza. Hamza, dude, seriously, I got an...
Dude in Arabic means worm.
Oh,
that's right. Well, dude.
In fact, American soldiers in Iraq and in Kuwait were actually told, "Do not call an Arab dude."
Wow,
I'm telling you, that's the truth. It was in the manual.
Oh, I'm so never doing that again. Holy cow!
It's okay, dude. Don't worry about it.
That's funny. Listen to him. Okay, Hamza. Seriously, part of the reason you're on today is helping our listeners understand what it takes to become one of you's guys. Okay? So I posed this question to Rabbi Steve Leader. So he and I are on a long flight. Now it's you. You and I are on a long flight to Australia. Irritatingly long. I've done the trip like 8 times. And you're stuck beside me. Sorry. And then I say to you at one point, okay, I'm thinking about becoming a Muslim. What do I do? What do I do? And now it's your turn, Hamza. What? Go. Ready? Go.
All you have to do is testify that there's only one reality behind existence, and that is, in essence, the unknowable God, but in attributes, infinitely knowable, in mercy and beauty and exaltedness. And you have to accept that one God by simply saying, La ilaha illallah. There's no God except that one true living God, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of all of the prophets. And you have to accept all the prophets, the ones we know and the ones we don't know. And then you accept the final prophet, Muhammad, by saying, and Muhammad is the messenger of God. And then do your best to live in accordance with the Abrahamic morality, which is enshrined in the Ten Commandments, which is shared by both Muslims, Christians, Muslims, and Jews. That's it.
Easy. Okay. It sounds a little easier than what the Jewish guy was saying. The Jewish guy.
Well, but to be fair to Jews, Jews have 613 Kishrut laws. And so they are actually, a Jewish rabbi is encouraged not to accept a non-Jew into, they're supposed to actually reject the 7 times the conversion because of the difficulty of being a Jew. So they actually... All we Noahides, that we're called Noahides, the Abrahamic peoples outside of Judaism, we only have 7 of the 10 commandments that have to be obeyed. And adultery is one of them, Drew, okay? So thou shalt not commit adultery. That's one of them.
Hold on a second. How is that thrown out there so easily? Hold on. How come you only got to obey
people,
7 out of the 10?
Because the last time I spoke to you guys,
oh, yeah,
I just noticed you were kind of a little obsessed with the virgins and things like that. So I just want to make sure you didn't go to some kind of default setting and remove that commandment.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
yes. Yeah, getting the virgins in heaven. I get it. Okay. So why do you only have to obey 7 of the 10?
Because the Jews have to keep the Sabbath, right? And so... They have a set of principles that they have to follow that
right.
People don't. But we have to believe in one God, and we have to honor our parents. We have to not steal, not commit adultery, and not kill. And and we're okay. According to Jewish tradition, we are actually saved if we believe those things. So every Christian, according to Jewish tradition, is actually saved. Every Muslim is saved. And believe it or not, the most enlightened of the Muslim rabbis, of the Muslim imams in the history of Islam, the rabbis said that Islam was a providential force, and they actually believed that, that the Prophet Muhammad was preparing the way for a large segment of humanity. This, you can see George Kohler wrote a book called Jewish Theology, and he has a chapter, Judaism and Islam. And in that chapter, he says that the enlightened rabbis, people like Moshe bin Maimon, Maimonides, and others, said that the Islamic tradition is a providential force that the Prophet Muhammad was sent by God to teach a large swath of humanity the Noahidic laws and prepare them for the coming of the Messiah in the latter days. So this was acknowledged by Judaism. Christianity was also seen as a providential force, but it did not have the same weight as Islam, according to the Jewish rabbis, because of the Trinity, because Muslims and Jews share the same monotheistic conception of God, whereas in the
Oh, you would call Christians polytheistic, then?
No, I don't call them polytheistic. There are Muslims that do call them polytheistic, and I think there are certain iterations of Christianity that do fall into a kind of polytheistic. But I've read Aquinas, I've read the theology of the Orthodox and the Catholic tradition, and they believe in a God that has no composite. You know, if you see the expressions of the theology of a traditional Christianity, their conception of God in reality is very similar. But they believe in the personas. And persona, as you know, which is the Latin word that the medieval scholastics used for the Trinity, persona means mask. So in essence, it's similar to Hinduism, where the Brahman believe in one God. But the common people kind of understand God through these personifications.
Right.
Right. And so the personas, even Meister Eckhart said that God is one in reality. The Godhead is one. It's indefinable. And this is what in theology they call the via negativa, that we cannot know God's essence. But we know about his essential nature is that there is no composite. There's no compound. He's not in any location. And so the mystery of the incarnation is we could debate it until the end of time. It is a mystery in the end. But nobody, unless you were a monotheist or a deistic, traditional Christianity understood that Christ was a human being. It was the Logos that inhered in him in a mystery that we could never comprehend. Anyway, I shouldn't be teaching you guys Christianity.
John 1:13, 1:14?
Was it? What are you looking at me for?
I still remember my debating stuff.
Okay, so Hamza... If I almost called him dude again. So, cheekworm, if I was to jump ship, right? If I was to say, okay, I'm not sure about the Jesus stuff anymore, and maybe it's because I've become a little bitter about the tribal conditioning I experienced as part of the evangelical scene. Whatever the reasons are. Then we were sitting on the plane and I go, I really want to do what you guys are doing. I want to believe in it. I want to get it. What are the first three steps? Like you got to simplify this, dude.
Three installments.
I used to play hockey, so you got to keep it simple.
The goal here to get your puck into that goal is very easy. It's just you basically do that testimony, and then you are a Muslim. There are rules like Judaism because we do have a legal tradition and we have sacred rituals, but those are not necessary to be a Muslim. They're considered obligatory, but there are many Muslims that don't actually practice them. I'll give you an example. I have a Pakistani friend. He passed away, Colonel Rahim. He was in the British Raj, and he had a good English friend who told him that I love Islam. I would love to become a Muslim, but I can't give up my brandy and cigars. And Colonel Rahim said to him, by all means, sir, do not let that stop you from becoming a Muslim. There are many Muslims that can't give up their brandy and cigars. And so
I'm in.
That's what's really important to remember is that this is about, and by the way, according to the Hanafi madhab, you just became Muslim, Drew.
Oh.
So I now consider you my brother.
All right. We'll see you at morning prayer, buddy.
Because they don't, in the Hanafi school, you don't actually have to say the testimony. You just say any indication, like saying the Prophet Muhammad acknowledged his prophecy or something like that. But in any case, Islam is not a hard religion. Muslims make it much harder than it actually is. And our belief is that just acknowledging the oneness of God and acknowledging that, that we have a personal God that actually does care about us providentially and has sent messengers. Now, one of the most fascinating things about the messages of the prophets, unlike philosophies, every philosopher will disagree. Aristotle disagreed with Plato about universals. Plato departed from his own teacher, Socrates. Every philosopher negates their teacher. It's historically a fact. All of these prophets come with the same message. None of them contradict another one. They all say an essential message that, that you have a God who created you and who wants you to live in accordance with laws that will protect you. These laws that we've been given, we know now how much harm there is in adultery and fornication. It breaks down families, the STDs that are emerging out there. It's a horrible lifestyle, the hookup culture. And we know how fulfilling those of us who are in relationships intimately with a wife we love and care for, and or a wife who's in a relationship with a husband. These are what give us true joy, is living in accordance with these laws. And as Augustine said, there's a part of the human being in our heart, there's a hollowness that we'll only find peace in God. And this is the belief that we have. And then they tell us that there is going to be a reckoning. There's no free lunch. And everything in this world that we do has an impact. Kierkegaard said every moment is an ethical moment, that we are making choices. Right now, I will not buy anything made in China because of what the Chinese are doing to mainland China, to the Christians and the Muslims. Because these are ethical choices that we make. I won't buy chocolate because I know that chocolate, unless it's fair trade, chocolate is the child labor. These are choices that we can actually make as individuals. And the more people that become enlightened towards this path, the more people that wake up to their moral responsibility, that each one of us, every single day of our lives, we are making choices that determine the type of world that we're going to live in.
Okay, what do you do with the scripture that many Jesus people would throw at you? And you know it. Here we go.
Yes, John.
Yes?
Yes, 16.
No one comes to the Father but by me. In other words, the exclusivity of the claims that Jesus Christ is the only way to get it right with God. Go. Go. I probably shouldn't speak to him like that.
And Muslims believe that no one will come to God also except through accepting Jesus. So we actually believe that also.
Did you know that, Tim?
I did not.
Somebody was sleeping during that class.
It is an obligation of Muslims to believe that Jesus was the Messiah, that he was sent, that he was born of a virgin birth. We have the Annunciation in the Quran. We have the virgin birth in the Quran. We have the Eucharist is in the Quran. It's in a chapter. There's a chapter called Al-Ma'idah, which is the table when the meal, the last meal, was given. So these are all things that we share. Jesus is mentioned more than the Prophet ﷺ, Muhammad by name, in the Quran. Mary has a chapter dedicated to her. This is one of the things that really attracted me to Islam, was the fact that I wasn't losing Jesus. And in fact, the Sufis have always used Jesus as a model for his asceticism, his otherworldliness. Jesus walked on water. Jesus was incredible. And we love Jesus. There's no Muslim. In fact, when we say Jesus, we say alayhi salam upon Jesus' peace. When we say Mary, we say alayhi salam upon her peace. These are our loved ones. Huh. No Muslim could be a true Muslim without loving Jesus. And then the Quran says that those who are closest to you of all the faiths in the world are the Christians. Why? Because it says that among them are people that give up the world, and they're humble people. And humility is one of the things, again, that we're losing in the world. We're losing this. We can't go to God except with humility. But we also have to have a type of fallibilism. Most of us were born arbitrarily into families that determine what we believe and what we don't believe. when you study the history of Christianity, we know there were many types of Christianity in the early period. There were monophysites, diophysites, there were Arians, there were people that believed Jesus was a Unitarian. Michael Servetus, who was one of the, I think he's the last person that was actually burnt at the stake in Geneva by John Knox. He was a Unitarian. He was burnt for believing in Christianity, but believing Christ was not the physical Son of God, not begotten, but rather a spiritual Son of God. There are sons of God in the Old Testament. David is called a son of God, meaning a righteous man.
All right, I got to be mindful of our time here. Holy cow, I could talk to you guys for a long time. So listen, we got a comment. And this is why I do this show. 16 years I've been doing this show. Mm-hmm. This is why I do the show. The comment is from Dana Pinkerton Ashley. Why are you promoting a false religion? There's an accountability issue here. So sad for you. Mm. So I replied, Dana Pinkerton Ashley, the feeling is mutual. I have a really hard time, and one of the first reasons I decided years ago to bring on people who believe different faiths is because I wanted primary. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Can I say something?
Sure. Yeah.
I just want to say God bless Dana. You know, this is.
I know you're nicer than I am.
No, but this is a tough time. You know, things are breaking down. You know, religion. People are trying to hold on. You know, they're trying to hold on to their faith. And it's really difficult when there's so much relativism out there and everybody's saying it's all the same and it's all equal. And I just, there's a heart there. And we just have to be open to that heart.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I do is I actually, one of the things I do in my real day job, I actually teach the U.S. military, specifically the Special Forces, Islam 101. That's one of my courses that I teach, and extremism and terrorism. I actually call it terrorism in Islamic costume. I go through radicalization. I go through how ISIS recruits on social media, and Sheikh Hamza will understand this. And then I show the religious, the examples that ISIS uses and what normative Muslims give as a response to ISIS. So I, for example, there's another Sheikh called Muhammad Ali Yaqubi. He's a very famous Sheikh. He did a video called Refuting ISIS. It's a one-hour-long video, and he basically dismantles the idea that ISIS is Islam or Islamic. Mm. And one of the things that I teach in that class is how, because remember my point on cooperation or confrontation. Muslims and Christians both believe in the second coming of Jesus Christ, peace be upon him. We both believe that when he returns, we will yield authority to him. Mm. So in the end, we actually, and it's fine, a Christian might want to believe Islam is a false religion. And many Muslims I know will believe Christianity is a false religion and they're all going to hell and they're screwed. But, you know, the sensible among us understand that, listen, it's like a four-lane highway, right? Each one will take us to our destination. Some might take us on an off-ramp and get us there a little bit later, but the end goal, the end result is the same. So especially for Christians who are listening to this, it's not really to, you know, it's not for you, anyone to like promote conversion or anything like that. I mean, obviously Muslims like it, just like Christians like it. But that we have a choice, right? Either we can take the path of cooperation, mm-hmm. where we can see all these things that we hold in common. I remember this one person saying, you know, oh, well, wait till Jesus comes, you know, and then you will see. And I just said, hey, I can't wait for Jesus to come,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, we're ready to line up in the ranks to yield authority to him. So
wow.
It should be less about, you know, real religion, fake religion. And at least let's see where we are when, you know, Jesus comes back. So
Hamza,
calm down.
There's also something to remember that, you know, in my father's house are many mansions, and Peter reminds us that he believed that anybody who believed in God and acted righteously would be acceptable to God. So that's important to remember, that there are inclusive verses in the New Testament, that we're living in a world that has many, many ways of understanding the divine. It's important for us to adhere to our faith and believe, but it's also important for us to recognize, and this is part of Vatican II's recognition, but there are sincere people out there. I would recommend that you watch. There's a video called Why Evangelicals Hate Muslims by Pastor Bob Roberts. It's on a website called a YouTube channel called Amir Stein. And he talks about his experience of going to Afghanistan, of going to Palestine, and actually interacting with Muslims and being overwhelmed by the devotion he saw. When we think about Catholicism, Catholicism is not pedophilia, no matter what the media says. Catholicism is Julian of Norwich. It's Augustine. It's St. Thomas Aquinas. It's Meister Eckhart. People are flawed. Institutions are flawed. But the fruits of Catholicism were immense, intellectually, spiritually, psychologically, emotionally, and institutionally. And the same is true. Islam is not terrorism. Islam is the Taj Mahal. Islam is the Alhambra Palace. Mm. It's the incredible knowledge. It's the fact that out of our 51 navigational stars, 43 have Arabic names because it was Muslims that identified them and translated into Latin. So we're using Arabic numbers. They're called Arabic numerals, not Hindi numerals. Hindi are used in the East. The Arabic numerals that we use were from the Muslims. So we're indebted. All of us are indebted to each other and recognizing these civilizational debts, and that we're all here together. We all breathe the same air. And that we're all facing our mortality, and we need to help each other. This is a time when we really need religions to work together for the greater good. Because, you know, Karl Marx is quoted as saying opium, that religion is the opium of the masses. That's not what Marx said. Marx said religion is the sigh of the oppressed. It's the heart of a heartless world. It is the opium of the masses. In other words, the world is so painful that religion is what enables people to survive the pain of the world. In the West, we have lost religion, and now people need real opium. And so now opium has become the opium of the masses. And this is why we have to recognize this, not just the truths of our religions, but the social utility of our religion. People need hope. They need faith. And our faith, they have much reason in them. They have things that transcend reason, but they have much reason in them. Come, let us reason together, Paul said. Mm-hmm. You know, we believe in the intellect.
Hamza, hold on a second. When I read to you the comment from somebody that was watching the live Facebook stream, see, I'm still, I'm an immature putz. I really am. And my comment to them was like, you must be new to our show, because for 16 years, that's been the premise. One of the main premises of our show is we want primary source material. If I want to find out what a Muslim believes, I'm going to ask a Muslim. I'm not going to go to the Christian bookstore to read a book about what Muslims believe. That's ridiculous. So that's why I've had the High Priest of the Church of Satan on the show. That's why I've had the leader of Canada's polygamous colony. That's why I've got Mubin Sheikh. I just wanted to put those three together. But Hamza, you broke up, man. Your emotions leaked out of you. What happened there for you?
You know, what happened to me is I felt hurt. You know, I know how hard it is to be a Christian in a culture that's becoming so increasingly anti-Christian. And this civilization was built on Christianity. It's not the scaffolding of the West. It is the foundation of the West. And it's being seen now as a scaffolding that can just be removed now that the civilization's built. Mm-hmm. And I have dread when I think of a world without God.
Man, I got to learn from this guy, because I don't do anybody any good when I'm being a jerk back to them, right? And really, it's just a cover. It really is a cover. I want to hold on. I got to admit a couple things here. First of all, Sheikh Hamza Yusuf, there's a reason you're in spiritual leadership and I'm not. I just am tired of Jesus people freaking out over simply hearing what someone else believes. But it's on a Christian radio station and you're promoting, I just don't have the time for that.
Trust me, the Muslims get it the same. The Jews get it the same. It's the same. When you start opening it up.
Yeah, we have, Drew, we have a verse in the Quran repel a wrong with a right, and you will see the one that has animosity towards you becomes like a good friend. And this was our prophet. He always saw his enemies as potential friends, as potential allies. And I personally believe that the Muslim community and the Christian community, we share so many common denominators, and there are so many areas that we can work together to promote the common weal. And it's a tragedy for me to see the kind of hatred. You know, it's interesting that the medievals understood Islam to be a Christian heresy. They actually saw it as a splinter from Christianity, and we, you know, the Muslims, we believe in Christianity, not in all the details of the religion, but our Quran tells us the gospel is a true revelation from God, that Jesus was a prophet of God, and that he was teaching the essential truths that we need. And one of the most important truths of all these truths is that we all are children of the same Creator. Our prophet said, all of you are dependents of God. He used the same word in Arabic for children. He said, all of you are children of God, and the best of you are the best to God's children.
You know, he's a master of Arabic, too, right?
I don't want to talk about him
how
anymore.
How old were you again, Sheikh Hamza? You were 17 when you went to Mauritania?
I was 17 when I got into a car accident at 17. I converted when I was 18. I've actually said 17, but... It's not accurate. I've said it publicly, but I was actually 18.
Oh, wait, so you were lying?
17, 18.
I wasn't lying, but I think what happened in my 17th year was a year of intense search, so yeah. I really felt that I was already there. But I went to Mauritania in my early 20s after studying in the Emirates, and I lived with Bedouin that were just incredible people. They're the only nomadic people that I know of on the planet that are highly educated. They have, they have traveling libraries. They have phenomenal memories, and they're some of the happiest people I've ever seen, despite incredibly difficult conditions. In fact, I just wrote an article we built the student housing was basically you have to build your own hut, and it was branches. And there was an American there studying when I was there, and. He went out, he'd just gotten there, and he went out to cut down a tree to build a branch. And one of an illiterate Bedouin saw him and ran screaming. When he got there, he said, what are you doing? He said, I'm cutting down a tree. He said, no, don't cut down the tree. Just take a branch from this tree, go take a branch from another tree. But they really know how to live in a way that conserves their natural resources, something that we need to learn ourselves.
But still, it was early 20s. It's Mauritania. It's literally in the deserts of Mauritania. Yeah. And you studied there for how many years?
I was with the Mauritanians. I was in the desert for about a year. I was with the Mauritanians for 7 years.
Yeah, this is with Sheikh Murabit al-Hajj, rahimahullah, right?
Murabit al-Hajj, yes. And Sheikh Abd al-Rahman, several different teachers, yeah. And I just benefited from them immensely. One of my favorite people in the world, just really amazing.
Can I join the cool kids for a second here with the insider language and stuff? Jeez.
Well, these are basically, like I always say, because I'm biased, of course, because I'm Sufi, we always say, and Sheikh Hamza, I'm Naqshbandi Sufi through now Dr. Noor Kabbani. But the Sufis are like the Jedis of the Muslim world. And what we call the Wahhabis are like the Sith. Right? Yeah. And they're like the Sith.
Yeah, I don't really look at it like
that. He doesn't, but he studied with the Jedi Masters, basically. Right, right. And also, of course, Sheikh Abdullah bin Bayya, rahimahullah, Sheikh Abdullah bin Bayya is a scholar who's been doing a lot of stuff with Sheikh Hamza, the Forum of Peace, Forum for Peace. And there's a great article that came out. Of course, the headline is triggering by itself, and I think that's deliberately so. It's called Updating Outdated Islamic Laws. And it's basically just like, let's get with the times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And go back to that traditional way of looking at law in a more spiritual way.
Okay, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. First of all, there are about 50 people watching the Facebook live streaming. We just want to wave to all our friends out there. A couple of comments. Omar Hamid has said, I've been following Sheikh Hamza Yusuf for almost 2 decades and met him many times. He sacrificed a lot to reach the level he's at. He's traveled to learn underqualified teachers and spiritual guides, Islam, like all religions, is about spiritual transformation of obtaining a metaphysical view of the... Wow, this keeps going. I don't have time to read all that. Another person, Amma Mullah Afzal. I'm not saying these names right. As the scholar mentioned, we see the name Jesus more in Quran than Prophet Muhammad. We send blessings to Jesus every time we say his name. But the point I really wanted to say was that I have slept in a Bedouin tent in the middle of the Judean desert during the worst sandstorm they received in 40 years.
Wow.
It flattened our tent, and I woke up with sand in every orifice imaginable.
Wow.
Just thought I'd share that with you.
So you basically brought the plagues of God when you, when you went to visit.
Yes.
Moses too.
Oh, man. Sheikh Hamza Yusuf, dude. Oh, I keep calling him dude. Sorry.
Sir, nice guy.
You know what, man? You are a great communicator, and I know this because I'm not really intelligent, and I'm understanding what you're saying.
Well, I appreciate that, but I'm afraid, you know, first of all, God gave you a voice that was designed for the radio.
And a face.
Okay, we need to end this. I'm getting tarnished here, man. Anyway, yes, sorry, sir. Yes?
Yeah.
You
no,
were complimenting me, yes?
Yeah, I was, and I know that your false humility in expressing your stupidity is not fooling me. Sun Tzu says in The Art of War, feign ignorance and send your enemies into disarray.
I hope we meet one of these days. Wait, are you allowed to drink? What are they? Can these guys drink or no?
No drinking.
No drinking, but we can have that non-alcoholic wine.
Heineken just did a 0%.
He said non-alcoholic. You mean grape juice?
Grape juice, yeah. Oh, the Baptist wine.
Yeah, I meet more Baptists at the liquor store than anywhere else.
But I'll tell you something, Drew. I swear to God, I know Christ's first miracle in the New Testament, and if you can turn water into wine, I'll drink it with you.
There you go.
Okay, I'm going to work on that. I'm going to work on it.
We can turn turkey into bacon. Does that help?
Yes, that's it.
That's right.
Sheikh Hamza Yusuf, what a! I'm so glad we were able to get a hold of you and have you on the show before we finished at the end of the month.
I really appreciate it. And after hearing your water commercial, I can see why you're giving up radio. and keep up the good work. Yeah, really. I appreciate you reaching out to me, and it was very, you know, I feel a connection despite the distance and the fact that it's telephonically how we've communicated. But God bless and keep up the good fight.
Thank you. I hope you and Mubin get to hang out one of these days, too. That'll be a crazy meeting. Although he might be one of those stalker fans. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know how to escape the conversation, so you keep walking?
Don't worry. I had a restraining order put on him.
Good stuff, man. Listen, thank you. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, Sheikh Hamza Yusuf. Thank you.
Jazakallah khair. And God bless Dana. Yeah.
Yeah. What was the last part he said?
Dana. The woman who... Or a man who...
God bless Dana Pinkerton, Ashley.
What are we talking about now?
The person that you got mad at on Facebook.
Oh, I've forgotten about her already.
He wasn't feigning stupidity, by the way.
People think it's false humility. It ain't. It ain't. Dude, that was an amazing show, thanks to you.
Yeah, it was. That's...
Thanks to you. It was so good, we decided to go a little longer and not quite get to the point where we're airing the counseling sessions with my wife and I. Sorry you missed that. Well, we're going to play it now, but...
Okay. Are you going to live stream that, too?
No.
No.